You are listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. On Friday, July 13th, at the Shorter Community African Methodist Episcopal Church in Denver, gun safety advocates and student activists gathered together for the Road to Change Forum. They examined gun violence through the lenses of community healing and discussed how to take short-term and long-term action against gun violence. Among hundreds of locals, there were rows and rows of students dressed in red showing their support and involvement. The forum began with Reverend Timothy Tyler welcoming everyone in attendance.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Timothy Tyler, and I want to welcome you tonight to Shorter Community AME Church. This church belongs to the community, and how beautiful you look tonight. Give yourselves a hand. I'd like to acknowledge the presence of my wife, Dr. Nita Mosby Tyler. Stand up. We know that it is warm as Sunday morning in here, and this is just not the warmth of love and gratitude that we have for you. Our air conditioner is under construction and repair, but you all do know that the work of activism is hot and sweaty, and we have a lot of work to do. So you are right at home. We are proud and grateful to welcome you tonight. We are grateful for the leadership of all these students that are here tonight. Would you give them a hand, please? Thank you. We are proud of the leadership of Tay, who is a part of our congregation, and we're grateful to his leadership. Yes. And so tonight we ask you to please feel welcomed. Know that you are at home in this house. And we thank you. We're grateful that you're here tonight. And I know that when we leave here, we're going to leave here better than we were when we arrived. We have a lot of work to do. We must keep our babies safe and sound. Yes. I want to encourage you tonight. We have a lot of work to do. As you may have noticed today, the whole world knows that we have a lot of work to do. The people in London know that we have a lot of work to do. I know it's discouraging. I know it's frustrating, but do not get tired. We will win this fight! We will win this fight! Yeah. Our foreparents used to say, stay together, children. Stick together, children. Don't you get weary. And so don't get weary. And if we follow the leadership of our young soldiers, if we follow the leadership of our young soldiers, and if we provide for them the wisdom and encouragement and experience that they need, then I believe the community is in good hands. Again, I say to you, welcome to Shorter Community African Methodist Episcopal Church. Welcome, welcome.
After a couple more welcome speeches, Sarah Grossman from the Drew Project presented a powerful introduction.
For as long as I can remember, I have always been obsessed with minutiae. Follow me on this. When I was 5, the question was, which stuffed animal slept closest to my head last night? In college, what song is that person on the elevator listening to? I must know. A few years ago, it turned into, exactly how many steps does it take to get from my parking spot to my front door? When I found out that my best friend from college, Christopher Andrew Leinonen, was one of the 49 victims of the Pulse shooting, the minutia shifted. Why did it take so long for the police to get inside? Were they waiting because it's a gay club and Florida is still pretty conservative and they were afraid that there was a need to have special suits for this particular mission? Why was Drew one of the last people to be announced dead? Why did I not spend more time with him and his boyfriend Juan 2 weeks prior while I was visiting? How many bullets come out of that particular type of gun per second? Did the shooter legally obtain it? Why are civilians allowed to have weapons of war? Was it terrorism? Was it a hate crime? Were they in the white room of Pulse, where we used to take pictures on the couch, or near the swirly bar, or hanging out where the go-go boys danced in the darker room that was the home of my first kiss in public? In due time, all of my questions were answered. Most of them. I'm still not sure why civilians are allowed to have weapons of war. I'm still not sure why people are targeted for who they love. It's funny to have to think about minutia in a context of something, a shooting, that would be called massive. The largest mass shooting at the time, in fact. And actually, even more questions were answered without my even having to ask them. Drew's heart weighed 263 grams. He was shot 8 times. His boyfriend Juan made it to the hospital because Drew shielded him on the dance floor. The shooter pledged allegiance to ISIS but left no other evidence of being radicalized. The shooter, whether intentionally or not, targeted a gay club on Latin night. And yes, the answer is yes, my friend's death was about to be politicized. But what about all of the gun deaths that are not politicized? The ones that don't get an entire news cycle or even make the news? What about the stories you don't hear about ever because the media simply could not keep up with covering the number of deaths due to gun violence in America every single day? There are an average of 96, by the way. That's the equivalent of 2 Pulse nightclubs a day. In April, I spent 3 days with 36 other gun violence survivors as part of the Everytown Survivor Network. I learned about the movement and how I could share my story to inspire others to get involved. But what I valued most of all was connecting. Being around other people who just get it can be very few and far in between. The knowing half smile, half frown you give each other when you meet for the first time. There were survivors from all of the shootings you've heard of. Pulse, Las Vegas, Virginia Tech, Santa Barbara, and Sandy Hook. But the people who I desperately want you to hear about tonight are the one-offs. The survivors who will never see their loved ones again due to a stray bullet. The people whose children were killed because a gun was not locked up properly. The mothers whose sons were killed because of the color of their skin. Like my new friend Donna, who lost her son at a random shooting in Berkeley, California. He was a pre-law student with a bright and promising future. What's worse is, a year prior, she lost her younger brother to the war in Iraq. His head was the only thing that made it back to US soil. Let that sink in. Donna lost her brother who was fighting for America, and that same America took her son. Black men are several times more likely to be victims of gun violence in our country. Other survivor fellows, Diana, Valerie, Anita, Trinell, Sharon, Brenda, Regina, all of their loved ones were killed for existing while black. We need to fight harder for our brothers and sisters of color. I also cannot get the image of Doreen's story out of my mind. She described her 3 nieces as a quiver, which made me think of tiny, fuzzy ducklings following her around a pond. Days after hosting her oldest for a backpack packing party before kindergarten, despite a restraining order, her sister's ex killed, or stalked, shot, and killed Doreen's sister and her girls. Doreen went from picking out backpacks to picking out coffins, including one for a six-month-old. I can't get that image out of my head, and I hope you can't either. Cases like Doreen's and Madeline's and Katie's and Melody's are all the reason we need red flag laws. People who are deemed too dangerous because of domestic violence convictions should not be able to access guns. Lachey lives with the 5 bullets in her body left by an ex-boyfriend when he shot at her in front of her children. Michelle, who is in the audience today, was held at gunpoint in Seattle in the 90s by one of the most prolific bank robbers in the history of our country. There are people whose parents or siblings were killed opening the front door to a random person with a gun. I had never heard of this before, but it happens more often than we would like to think. I tried to hold back my tears after listening and recounting story after story, after case of domestic violence followed by gun violence. Stray bullets, wrong place at the wrong time. Since when is going to the mall, seeing a concert, going to school, or dancing the night away at a club the wrong place? People doing what they love with people they love should be nothing but the right place. Every time a tragedy strikes, we get thoughts and prayers. And it's too soon to talk about gun violence. But thoughts and prayers alone are not saving lives, and it's not too soon, it's way too late. It's too late to discuss Las Vegas, too late to discuss Parkland, Aurora, Columbine, and it's too late to discuss Pulse. It's too late for Drew, it's too late for Juan, and it's too late for the rest of the 49 and the 17 from Parkland too, as well as the numerous other lives taken too soon. But at these events, we are students, mothers, husbands, children, veterans, pastors, gun owners even, and just about any other identity group you could think of. But the big equalizer here is that we have all been affected by gun violence enough to speak out and do something. Yeah. We are all alchemists, sharing our singular stories for the greater good. The goal here is to be empathetic and engaged, and to share our stories with people in hopes that humanizing an epidemic is possible. I think it is. It means showing up. It means voting in November. It means speaking out whenever and however you can. And it means doing this work because our lives depend on it. All we have to do is move the minute to the massive. Thank you.
And then the forum began, co-moderated by Bria, a student from Milwaukee, Washington on the March for Our Lives national tour, and Tay Anderson, president of Never Again Colorado.
Hello, beautiful people of Denver, Colorado. My name is Bria. I'm 17. I'll be a senior this fall. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm on the March for Our Lives national tour, speaking of inner city gun violence for the brown and black population that do not have a voice. And I will be your co-moderator today.
I'm Tay Anderson. I'm the president of Never Again Colorado. I am 20 years old, and I am making sure that we continue to unequivocally say that black lives do indeed matter.
Yes, they do. Awesome. So before we start with our questions, I just want to address that every person on this panel have a story with, that has to do with gun violence. So if you are comfortable, we are opening this floor if you want to share your story.
Hi, my name is Jessica. with gun violence. There was this one time when I received a text and an email from former people from my high school saying that there was a potential shooter coming to my high school. And I was in college, and my sister was at my high school at that time. And the idea that this could happen to her terrified me. Luckily, the police did take this seriously enough to arrest him, and they did find the list of shooters, of victims that he wanted to shoot, and they got him in time. But had this not had happened, my sister, she's in a wheelchair. She can't hide, and she can't run like her peers. And when Parkland happened, I had to tell my sister that if this happened on her college campus, she had to pretend to be dead. And that's something that a sister should never have to tell her younger baby sister, ever. And I'm honored to be up here today with everyone. And yeah, thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Alex King, and I'm from Chicago, Illinois. Being from Chicago, I experience gun violence every single day that I'm there. I've lost many friends and family. The most recent, however, is my nephew. I lost him a little over a year ago on May 13th. So. Excuse me, but my emotions are gonna be everywhere because the 13 is 13 and 29 are two numbers, two dates I'll never forget. But yeah, he was shot twice, once in the back of the head and once in the back, and he wasn't the initial target. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Matt Deitch. I'm 20 years old. I'm a graduate of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. I wasn't at the school when the shooting occurred because I had graduated 2 years before, but my brother and sister attended the school during the shooting, and it was my sister's 15th birthday. I went to so many funerals, and gun violence has been prominent in my life in so many different forms. I have friends that have that lost friends in the Vegas shooting, and I had seen. I was 12 years old, and I was going to the Holocaust Museum in D.C. We had stopped for ice cream, and the shooting had occurred there, right as we were waiting to go there. And my first day of college, I was in a parking lot in Santa Monica when there was a police standoff in the parking lot, and I was holding a bunch of bottles of water, and I had no idea what to do, and I hid behind a wall as my mom was in a car parked in the parking lot right in between where the standoff was happening, and that, thank God that it ended quickly. But gun violence takes many, many forms, and I think it's important to know that all these forms are connected by the fact that they were perpetuated by a firearm, and I'm just here to talk about the policies that I know could prevent these instances from ever happening again. So thank you so much for all being here today so we could just have this very important conversation. So thank you.
Hello, everyone. Once again, thank you all for coming out today and listening to this important conversation. My name is Jacqueline Corin. I am a current student at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. I'm going to be a senior next year. And on the day of the shooting, I actually was delivering carnations for Valentine's Day because I'm in student government. And I was delivering them in the building where the shooting was occurring. But I was lucky enough to get out about 10 minutes before the gunfire erupted. So it was really all about timing for me. Wrong place, wrong time. I was in the right place at the wrong time. So I just wanted to take this moment also to remember my good friend, Jamie Guttenberg. She was one of the victims of the shooting on the 14th. And today would have been her 15th birthday. So unfortunately, she is forever 14. So I just want to ask you all a favor if you want to join me in singing happy birthday to her. Are you ready? One. Oh, her name is Jamie, by the way. One, two, three. Thank you. Really, thank you.
Good evening. My name is Tom Mauser, and I'm here because of a question that was asked of me by my son, Daniel. Innocent question based on something he heard in his debate class among some of the members. He asked, Dad, did you know there were loopholes in the Brady Bill, the national law that requires background checks to be performed before purchasing a gun? 2 weeks later, he was killed with a gun that was purchased through one of those loopholes in the Brady Bill at Columbine High School. That's why I'm here. That prompted me into action. So later that year, I took a one-year leave of absence from my job, and I was hired by Safe Colorado to lobby our state legislature. When they failed to pass any significant gun legislation, we took one of those particular issues, that gun show loophole, and we put it on the ballot in Colorado. I was the spokesman for that campaign. And as many of you know, in Colorado, we closed that loophole by a vote of 70%. The people closed that loophole by a vote of 70% to 30%. It shows that if you put something reasonable in front of the people, they will support it, and they did so. So I do this for my son, Daniel, and I do it wearing his shoes. I feel that I'm literally walking in his shoes. These are the shoes that he was wearing on April 20th, 1999. And I wear them because I don't want other parents to have to go through what I've gone through. So I've continued my work. I'm on the board of, and I'm the spokesperson for Colorado Ceasefire. And I really appreciate the work that's going on here today. I'm really enthused by what the students are doing here.
To the other end now, my name is Sandy Phillips. And my husband and I have an organization called Survivors Empowered. We travel across the country in our tiny trailer, working with survivors and talking about gun violence in our country. Our daughter, Jessica, on my shoulder here, always on my shoulder, was 24 when she went to the movies and was shot 6 times with a .223. If any of you know anything about ammunition, .223s are the ammo that is used in the AR-15. She was shot once in the leg, and it traveled through to her other leg. The young man that she was with was and is still a paramedic and a firefighter, and he immediately went into safety mode and trying to stop the bleeding. What he didn't know at that time is that she had been shot 3 more times in the abdomen, once in the clavicle. The clavicle was just pulverized. There was nothing left. But that didn't kill her. She was on the ground screaming, call 911, call 911. And all of a sudden, she was quiet. She was quiet because she had had a headshot. That headshot blew her brains out onto the theater floor and onto her companion and left a 5-inch hole in her face. I tell this story often, unfortunately, because I think it really matters that we know the devastation that these bullets do to the human body. not only the lifelong sorrow that my husband and I live with, and the daily work that we do with fellow warriors who are in this room today, and it's nice to see you here, so thank you for being here. It's also important to know that it's not just a few bills that need to be taken care of and passed. We need to elect new people into office. And we need to have the moral authority and courage to ban assault weapons in our country.
My name is Jane Doherty, and I'm a sister. That could have been my sister. On December 14, 2012, my sister, Mary Sherlock, went to work one day, and she was never seen again. Mary was the brave school psychologist that ran towards a disturbed young man who blasted his way into her school, her beloved Sandy Hook, armed with an AR-15 assault rifle that he brought from home, three other guns. Three of them he brought into the school, along with 10 30-round magazines, all purchased legally by his mother. Mary was running a meeting. She actually had planned not to go to work that day. They had plans for the evening. But there was a child in need. She was the school psychologist, so of course she went. And when running that meeting, she heard the blast, and she and Don Hochsprung, the school principal, ran out of that room and towards the shooter. Knowing my older sister, I think she thought she could either take him down or talk him down, but she didn't have a chance. She was incredibly brave. I wish she wasn't so brave. But I think she just knew that's what she had to do to save children, and I'm sure she did. Mary was shot by 5 bullets. Dawn was shot by 6, and together they died on the lobby floor. The last time I saw my sister was at a wedding a week before the Aurora Theater shooting. I was not unfamiliar with gun violence. I live in Littleton, Colorado. 2 of my children were in lockdown schools that day. Today I know a lot of those survivors. 7 weeks after my sister was murdered, I was really mad. And I went to a rally, and a gentleman walked up to me and asked me my name, and I gave it to him. And somebody called me and said, "Will you speak at a press conference? We are introducing some bills." I'd never spoken publicly, and I said yes. And I wrote something down, and I showed up. And I've been doing that now, going on 6 years. I bring Mary with me everywhere I go. This was the last time I saw her at my sister's wedding. My daughter's wedding. And I take these to the Capitol with me when I testify, and I leave notes. I chase after lawmakers that don't want to talk to me, and I chase after lawmakers that will talk to me. I've been writing, I've been speaking, I've been marching, and I do it for Mary because I made a promise to her at her funeral mass. And every day I try to do something to honor Mary, and today I'm honoring Mary. Thank you.
My name is Paula Reed, and I taught English at Columbine High School for 30 years. I just retired, so long time. So obviously, if I was there for 30 years, I was there on April 20th. I lost 3 students that I was close to, Dan Mauser, Rachel Scott, and Isaiah Scholes. Dan and Rachel were on my speech team, and Isaiah was in my English class. And Dave Sanders was my colleague. And my life profoundly changed. In many ways, I lost who I was at that point as well. And I think the other thing that I need to say, and it gets a mixed reaction, but I think it's really important, especially as we start picking up energy in this country around the idea of arming teachers. I also taught Dylan Klebold. Don't ever ask me to shoot one of my students. Let's get the guns out of their hands. But my job for 30 years, and I was blessed to have it, was to love kids, not kill them.
Ooh, that's loud. My name is Charlie Jones. I am a student who lived in former student. I lived in East Denver, and if you aren't familiar with that community, it has often been compared to, or labeled as one of the most dangerous cities or areas in Denver. I live with my neighbor here, roommate Tay Anderson, and almost every night we hear a gunshot or we hear police sirens, and him and I also went to school together, and in our school, you can see where a gang shootout has happened in Fuller Park, or you can see where someone got a little too rowdy in the school and thought it was cool to bring a gun, and there are bullet holes in our Thunderdome, and there are bullet holes in our bathrooms, and we've been on lockdown I don't know how many times because of a supposed gun. And I'm also here to say this, in a community of color, we don't get the representation or the marches or the rallies for day-to-day violence. And that's why I'm here, is I'd like to do something about that and speak up for those who aren't spoken for.
So hi everyone, my name is Sam Craig. I'm with Students Demand Action here in Colorado. So we have a lot of our students up in the risers here in red, and we're coming out and organizing and doing what we can. Well, thank you all. Yeah, we have so many great students here in Colorado. We have Never Again, Students Demand Action. We're visited by the wonderful and courageous Parkland students, and we're just seeing a lot of young energy here, which is really inspiring to me and everyone else. So thank you guys so much, and thank you to our students. And to talk about my experience with gun violence, to be quite honest, I don't have any. I'm the epitome of white suburbia. I live in Littleton, for those of you who know where that is. Ken Carroll, so we don't have a whole lot of gun violence out there, but I can tell you that we all have a fear of gun violence in our schools. We have a fear of constantly knowing where our exits are in this church. First thing I did when I came in, I'm sure a lot of students here did, is look for the exits. And so we have that fear constantly, even if we're not experiencing it. And to think that we can have it all the way out in Littleton, that we can have it in Denver, that we can have it in Florida, that we can have it anywhere. Gun violence affects all parts of everyone's lives in the United States, and that's something that needs to be brought to light.
You are listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. In case you weren't here for the start of the program, you're listening to audio from the Road to Change Forum in Denver, which took place on Friday, July 13th at the Shorter Community African Methodist Church. gun safety advocates from Colorado, relatives of those who died in recent shootings, and student activists who are part of the March for Our Lives national tour spoke before hundreds of people, discussing their own thoughts on how to take short and long-term action against gun violence. Here's more audio from the event, beginning with moderator Tay Anderson.
Alex, you're from Chicago, and people think that all gun violence in inner cities is due to gangs, yet they have never visited, I'm just going to say, our neighborhoods. What have you found to be true in your community?
What I feel to be true in my communities is around 90% of the cases that in Chicago, they go unsolved. So with that being said, if I was to buy a firearm and I was to go and commit a crime, go shoot somebody, 9 times out of 10, I will not get caught. So that just makes it to the point where, oh, I can do this again and again and again and nothing will happen. I say Chicago is the quote, I know all of us, maybe not all, but a lot of us has heard the quote, you can't judge a book by its cover. A lot of the times, people see Chicago, I'm like, oh, nope, not going there. You know how many times they shoot a week? Let's move on. But nobody really knows, like, the inside, the story, like what we live, what we go through. My nephew's case, for instance, to this day, the person who committed the crime was not caught. The case still is not solved. And it was portrayed as gang violence, which it wasn't at all. He wasn't even the initial target in the first place. He was actually just sitting on a porch all day with his girlfriend. And a car was circling the block. And then later on that day, some shots came from that car. And in a panic, he rushed trying to get home. So with that being said, people try to put it on, like, they try to say the case is a skin color. Let's just put it like that. If you are an African American and you shoot somebody, oh, it's gang violence. You're from like the Middle Eastern, oh, it's a terrorist attack. I mean, if you're white, oh, it's mental health problems. At the end of the day, these labels that we put on each other, we have to take them away. Gun violence is violence. Me shooting a person is not different from anybody else shooting a person. Gun violence anywhere is gun violence everywhere. So yeah, a lot of the times it's portrayed as gang violence, but it's not that at all. It's actually, I'ma just ask you this. Do you think sitting on your porch and being shot, is that wrong place, wrong time? Or is that just you on your porch trying to live life and life is being taken away from you? That's not wrong place, wrong time to me. That's senseless killing that needs to stop. Oh, thank you. I'm done.
Thank you so much, Alex. Yes, give him a hand. Yeah, a round of applause. Thank you for incorporating a voice for the voiceless, the brown and black individuals in inner cities who are mostly overlooked. So thank you for that. Our next question goes to the locals of Colorado. What has been your biggest organizing moment and change in your community? Obstacle that you had to overcome.
In 2013, we passed the expanded background check and the magazine limit. I'd never been to the Capitol, I'd never spoken out, but I went down there. I've forgotten how many times, because now I'm in my fifth legislative session, or sixth, and that was huge here in Colorado. One of the days we were down there, the gun enthusiasts were circling the Capitol. Somebody I was with was spit on. We were harassed. I can't tell you how many times I was told my sister should have had a gun, and if she had had a gun, she could have shot the shooter, and my sister would not have wanted to shoot somebody that she could have treated because he had gone to her school. So for me, that was a huge moment to realize somebody who had never spoken out, didn't know anything about the legislative process, had an effect. And so all of you can do the same thing. It just takes one person to go and take a step, take action. And this year we have an election, and we have a governor's race that could reverse all the work that I and a number of other survivors did in 2013. And we can't let that happen because it's going to make our communities more dangerous. Everybody that purchases a gun should go through a background check. And there is no reason to have a 30-round magazine. My candidate that I voted for in the primary did not win, but you can bet that I will be voting blue, and I will be supporting Jared Polish this summer, because Walker Stapleton has already said he will repeal our laws, and I work too dang hard. So I need all of you to do what you can, knock on doors, donations, make phone calls, because we cannot let those bills be repealed.
Having gone through the trial for the Aurora killer, we were very supportive of George Brockler at the time. I ask everyone in this room, please do not elect him as your AG. We knew that when he decided to try the case, that he was wanting the death penalty, and we also knew that we would never get it. We are grateful that we found out so much during that trial, things that none of you should ever have to know, and God forbid that you should. So we were grateful that there was a trial. However, that trial cost over $10 million, I believe. And afterwards, we knew that George was very conservative in his opinions, but afterwards, we really found out how far right he was. And when he was running for governor and got his endorsement from Ted Nugent, who is on the board of the NRA, that was it. And that was our last conversation. And he said to me, well, you know, there aren't any laws on the books that could have prevented what happened to your daughter. And I said, as a leader of this state, it would be your job to make sure that we do have laws on the book that would prevent this from happening. As your AG, he would have the power to try or not try, to try his best to roll back laws that are in place. So I urge you, please, whoever is running against him, and I don't know who it is right now. Thank you. Well, I will work for him from now until we leave this state.
A turning point for me was, I'm not politically inclined. Politics aren't my thing, but meeting Sam Craig, Tay Anderson, Madison Rose, and a group of other amazing young people from Students Demand and Never Again Colorado, having been included because I understand that gun violence isn't just a single problem for a single group of people. And ever since then, the marches we've worked together on, the town halls Never Again has put on, it's given me hope that if you do try hard enough, things will change. And having everybody out here tonight, having a panel, having our gracious students, having people from all walks of life show up gives, I think, everybody in this room hope. And that was a major turning point for me.
I think when we talk about Colorado victories and the gun violence prevention movement, I think one of the most obvious things that I want to shout out is the fact that Never Again organized a March for Our Lives here in Colorado that got between 130,000 and 150,000 people in Civic Center Park. It was amazing. I think March for Our Lives is one of the biggest reasons why probably a lot of you or all of you are here today. The motivation started by Parkland students, the branches that we had all across the country, and I think it's really inspired a whole new wave of people, all generations, old people and young people, all of our students to get involved. So I think that was the biggest moment for me here in Colorado.
All right, what I will say to the boos is what President Obama said, don't boo, vote. So this question is for everybody, and then I think we're gonna move on to some audience questions. Is a few of our representatives have received A ratings from the National Rifle Association, including Congressman Mike Kaufman. And I know I'll be supporting Jason Crow, including United States Senator Cory Gardner, State Senate President Kevin Grantham, Jerry Sonnenberg, and Chris Hulbert. On this panel, how does the NRA get in the way of passing or get away with passing such hurtful gun legislation?
I want you to look around this room real quick, and I want you to know that this is the NRA's boogeyman. because the way they block these life-saving legislation is simple, really. They buy our politicians, and they claim that it's in the name of their X amount of members that they definitely inflate. Because they're terrified of losing money and power. When the NRA receives 10%, 15% of sales from different gun manufacturers, you can tell that they're not standing up for anyone's rights except the rights of their wallet. And so this piece that I saw on Fox News was an interview of an NRA leader and one of the Fox News anchors. I don't know, they all kind of talk and sound the same. I forgot who it was, but they asked them about three of our policy pieces. They asked about universal background checks, red flag laws, and raising the age. And they asked, would this save lives? Would this work? And the NRA guy said, agreed with it. And then they asked a follow-up, well, then why are you... then what is the problem with these laws? They're like, well, they get in the way of gun rights. So if you're talking to someone about what's more important, gun rights or saving lives, and the person picks gun rights, that is not a person, that is a monster. That is someone who does not care about human life. And so what we have to do to stop the NRA from blocking this life-saving policy is we organize and we vote. Because if we don't let their money control the government, we make their money toxic, then we win and we get to save lives and not worry about the next shooting, but instead celebrate the fact that we put an end to this senseless violence.
I hate to rain on your parade, but to the extent that NRA money is blamed, yes, money is a big part of it. But we also have to face the fact. The fact is, they're very good at what they do. They intimidate, they organize, they make calls, they do a good job of what they do, and we're not doing as good a job as we need to be doing. The reality is that in America, the majority of Americans support a basic right to bear arms, but they also understand the need and will support restrictions on that right. But you have to appeal to those folks. You have to reach to the middle. Can't spend your time preaching to the choir, complaining about the NRA. You have to get out. You have to reach those people in the middle. You have to get them motivated. You have to get them off of their asses to change the system. The people who support the NRA, frankly, don't have to pay much of a price. Jane and I went and met with a staff member of Senator Gardner back in December. He said, we asked him a number of questions, and he said, you know, I'm new here. I don't know the answer to those questions. I'll have to talk to the senator. I haven't talked to the senator yet. Well, apparently he hasn't talked to his own senator because I've tried repeated times to get him to respond to those questions, and I don't get them. Why? Because he doesn't have to worry about ignoring me. Even the father of a Columbine victim, he doesn't have to worry about that because he doesn't pay a price. He's more worried about the price he's going to pay if he upsets the NRA. You've got to flip that. Until you flip that, things are not going to change very much.
So the NRA has 5 million members, as so they say. David Hogg has 3 of them. people send us NRA memberships anyway. When you think about it, only 5 million people out of 350 million people in the United States, they are not the majority at all. So 97% of people support universal background checks, and over 80% of NRA members also support universal background checks. But all we hear from the NRA is bad rhetoric because it's the people in power and it's the organization as a whole that's evil. NRA members in general aren't necessarily bad people. Some of them are responsible gun owners. Back in the 80s, is when it kind of shifted into a nasty organization. But back then, it was full of responsible gun owners and people that support the Second Amendment responsibly. I do too. But the NRA now bars common sense legislation like disarming domestic abusers. And shout out to Colorado because they relinquished the right to own a firearm for domestic abusers. So that's great on Colorado's standpoint. But that needs to be implemented on a federal level because these violent individuals should not have firearms in their household. So that's all I gotta say.
So we all know what's going on with the NRA, and we have to fight them, of course, tooth and nail. But here in Colorado, we have the group, the Rocky Mountain Gun Owners. And if you don't know who the Rocky Mountain Gun Owners are, you need to Google and find out about Dudley Brown. We talked about Senator Jerry Sodenberg, Senator Vicky Marble, and Senator Owen Hill. They are part of what is called the Kill Committee here in Colorado, and that's where the Republicans send our life-saving bills to die. And I have been going down there now since 2013, testifying to save our good bills and to fight against the deadly bills, like arming teachers. This year, we tried to pass a red flag bill. And I thought of the idea when we were working on this that maybe if we named this bill after Deputy Zachary Parrish, who was killed in an ambush in Douglas County, that maybe a few senators would speak to us, maybe a few senators would listen to us, but they didn't listen to us. They listened to Dudley Brown because they are afraid of Dudley, they're pals with Dudley. So here in Colorado, You need to help us work with the Rocky Mountain Gunners, fight against the Rocky Mountain gun owners, because they are very powerful here in Colorado.
I have a very quick little input with that. You were asking about the NRA and where they get their power. As of July 9th, which was just earlier this week, the international gun sales moved from the State Department over to the Commerce Department. When that happened, and it happened very quietly, and it was very much in the hands of the NRA and their ability to get things done the way they want it done. Now, anyone from any country can buy any amount of guns that they choose, as long as they have the money, without regulation, restriction, or registration. So you can imagine, if we're upset about what's happening at our borders now and the crime that is going on in some of these countries, we can just wait and see how bad it's going to be. So that's why we have to stand up, and that's why your vote is so important, not just at the presidential elections, but in every single election. So don't give up, fight.
We met with over 200 representatives in Congress, and the common thread between the Republicans that we met with was the idea that they didn't have enough research to tackle this this problem in this country. And so we asked the follow-up question, well, would you support funding research for gun violence prevention? And they all said yes, right, to us in these meetings. Well, this last week, the House Appropriations Committee blocked funding for CDC research on gun violence. And then McConnell, House Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, said, quote, "We don't really know if there's any solutions to gun violence, but I would support more research." And then they blocked the research. So that is how the NRA is stopping us from saving lives, because they are actively preventing information about reality, about what's actually going on. And then they peddle fear-mongering, and they try to make you feel like you're only safe if you're armed, when statistically shown that if you are armed, you are in fact way more unsafe than safe. And so when you're not living in reality, and when they're blocking information and research, you are obstructing both democracy and life. And so it's important to educate yourself, because the government is not going to educate you on how to defeat this government, because they are in the hands of the National Rifle Association, and it's time that we take our country back.
You are listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. That was audio from the Road to Change Forum in Denver, which took place on Friday, July 13th, at the Shorter Community African Methodist Church. Gun safety advocates from Colorado, relatives of those who died in recent shootings, and student activists who are a part of the March for Our Lives national tour spoke before hundreds of people, discussing their own thoughts on how to take short and long-term action against gun violence. If you want to hear updates for March for Our Lives, text CHANGE, CHANGE, to 9779, or visit www.marchforourlives.com. You can hear this whole program and see photos from the event at news.kgnu.org. For KGNU, I'm Lucy Suchek.